Good morning, everyone. Welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf alongside, as always, Nick Wright, Kevin Wilds. Greg Jennings is with us on a Thursday morning. Coming up, we now know what the NBA will look like when it returns. Which teams got better, which got worse, which stayed the same since play stopped back in March. And has the pendulum now swung too far the other way for Baker Mayfield? We will discuss all of that. But we start this morning with some controversial comments made by Drew Brees yesterday, comments that sparked a firestorm across social media. It happened when the Saints quarterback was asked what he thought about players potentially kneeling again during the national anthem this upcoming season. Take a listen.
Look, I will never agree with anybody disrespecting the flag of the United States of America or our country. Let me just tell you what I see or what I feel when the national anthem is played and when I look at the flag of the United States. I envision my two grandfathers who fought for this country during World War II, one in the Army and one in the Marine Corps, both risking their lives to protect our country and to try to make our country and this world a better place. So every time I stand with my hand over my heart, looking at that flag and singing the national anthem, that's what I think about.
Well, not long after, as expected, reactions started pouring in. LeBron James tweeting, "Wow, man, is it still surprising at this point? Sure isn't. You literally still don't understand why Cap was kneeling on one knee. Has absolutely nothing to do with the disrespect of the flag and our soldiers, men and women, who keep our land free. My father-in-law was one of those men who fought as well for this country. I asked him questions about it and thank him all the time for his commitment. He never found Cap's peaceful protest offensive because he and I both know what's right is right and what's wrong is wrong. God bless you." Well, there was also a lot of reaction within the NFL. This from Aaron Rodgers. "A few years ago, we were criticized for locking arms in solidarity before the game. It has never been about an anthem or a flag. Not then, not now. Listen with an open heart. Let's educate ourselves and then turn word and thought into action." Greg, I'll start with you. What was your reaction to how all of this unfolded yesterday?
No, before I get my reaction, kudos to Aaron Rodgers. Obviously, we know LeBron's stance and he's always been outspoken, but kudos to Aaron Rodgers because this is a topic that is uncomfortable. This is a topic that not everyone feels like they should have a say or should say anything. So kudos for him for actually saying something and supporting what we're talking about, the actual cause. Now to my response. My response was like, wow. And two words come to mind: callous and selfish, period. I'm not here to defend Drew Brees. What Drew Brees said was simply callous and selfish. And why do I say that? Because in his comments, when he talks about what the flag means to him and what he sees when he stands up and honors the flag, that's cool, that's fine. But that's not what we're talking about right now, Drew. We're talking about the injustices. Tell me what you see and what you saw when you watched the George Floyd murder. Tell me what you saw then. Tell me, did you see your grandfather fighting for that man? Because that's what essentially what was taking place, what you see, and you're telling me you saw your grandfather fighting for all of our freedom, for all of our justice, and that's not happening. That's the frustration. And when you hear someone who, and I'll put it in terms, in an analogy of swimming and drowning, like, here it is, you have Drew Brees standing on dry land, and I am drowning. You see me in the water. I'm drowning. This is not the time for me to be asked, well, can you get out? No, I can't. Not right now, I can't. But I see you, and if even if you can't swim, Drew, throw something in the water to help me. That's all we're asking. I just need your cognitive empathy. I don't need the compassion and the emotional, just cognitive. Just try to understand my plight, period. That's all anyone can ask of someone who is not understanding fully of what the plight is of the Black community and the Black man specifically. Drew, you gotta do better. And the timing and the insensitiveness that you've shown, it tells me all I need to know what direction you're headed. And just like a game in game of sport, if it was the fourth quarter with less than a minute to go and he got into the huddle and Michael Thomas said, man, I quit. You and everybody in that huddle would look at Michael Thomas and say, what? Right now? You quit on me right now? You know the goal. We can still win. But it would not stop you from continuing to move forward. And that's my message to Drew Brees. Regardless if you get into alignment and you agree with the cause, it will not stop the change that has to be made in America, period.
Greg, that was amazing. Thank you for sharing. That was tremendous. Nick, I hope Drew Brees was listening to that. That was fantastic, Greg. And Nick, as you said Monday, you talked about there's tremendous value in people like Drew Brees to just simply listen. And I wanted to walk through three of his teammates' reactions. And the first is Malcolm Jenkins. If we could roll that tape, please.
What it stands for, if you don't understand that other people experience something totally different than you, then when you talk about being the brotherhood and all this other, it's just lip service or it's only on the field. Because when we step off this field and I take my helmet off and I'm a Black man walking around America and I'm telling you I'm dealing with these things, I'm telling you my communities are dealing with these things, and your response to me is, don't talk about that here. This is not the place. Drew, where is the place, Drew? I'm disappointed. I'm hurt. Because while the world tells you that you're not worthy, that your life doesn't matter, the last place you want to hear from are the guys that you go to war with and that you consider to be allies and to be your friends. Even though we're teammates, I can't let this slide.
Now, here's Cam Jordan, who spoke to Drew yesterday. I feel like I gave him my perspective, almost like I was trying to force him to walk a mile in my shoes, and I hope it gets through. I hope it gets through to my guy, Drew, because that's what he is. He's been my guy since I entered the league. He's been a leader and a guy I can rely on the field. Well, off the field has to align. I can't allow people to tippy-toe on the line of this issue. You can't play both sides on this one. We're fighting to end social justice, and you're either social injustice, and you're either with us or you aren't. And here's Mark Ingram, who quotes Aaron Rodgers, which we heard earlier. This is Aaron Rodgers. It has never been about an anthem or a flag, not then, not now. And here's Ingram. Thank you for speaking truth for the oppressed and unheard. Thank you for understanding the why, Aaron Rodgers. Nick, Drew's energetic and outspoken leader of the team and the city, and I hope he uses the same energy this time to listen to his own teammates.
Yeah, I'm not optimistic on that. A couple things. First of all, I want to echo what you said, Wilds, about Greg. To my friend Greg Jennings, that might have been your finest moment on television that I've experienced with you, and it was a pleasure to be alongside with that, and I appreciate you sharing that perspective and that passion with the audience. Now to Drew. I think it's important to recognize the question he was asked. I'll read it to you exactly. How will the NFL respond to potential kneeling, and what is your responsibility in times like this? That's the question Drew Brees was asked. He could have taken it any direction he wanted. He chose, made an active choice to hit for the cycle of disinformation. He never once mentions police brutality, race, or racism. He immediately goes to disrespect, the red herring of disrespect of the flag or of America, and he evokes someone else's military service as a cloak for his opinion. So I can't believe we're here again, 3 years later, but let me once again remind Drew Brees and others who evidently need it, the timeline of events here. Colin Kaepernick was sitting during the national anthem. Nate Boyer, a Green Beret, met with him, explained to him that this was going to resonate poorly with some members of the military, active and former. And Nate Boyer suggested taking a knee because in the military, that is a sign of respect. So Cap started taking a knee. That's how this got going. I also would like to remind Drew Brees that at every turn, at every opportunity, Cap and everyone that kneeled alongside him made it crystal clear this is about systemic police brutality against the black community and has nothing to do with the flag, our troops, or anything to do with patriotism that you try to conflate and bring into this story. And all of America knows, and this is the most uncomfortable part of this, I would imagine, that if when Cap was first asked about kneeling, his answer was, I'm kneeling because I don't think our veterans are treated right. I think the VA is underfunded, and I won't stand for the flag until we take care of our servicemen and women. The disrespect for the flag would be the exact same, but the folks angriest at Cap would be his biggest supporters, because the issue was never about the flag. It was always about the cause and whether or not you believe that to be a just cause. But this is particularly disappointing from Drew, not only in this moment that we're in, 4 years after Cap started kneeling, 3 years after he was run out of the league for it, and in a week of documented on television police brutality in response to protests about police brutality. It's particularly disappointing from Drew because of the sport he plays and the city in which he plays it. Drew Brees plays a majority black sport in a majority black city. A majority black city that made him a hero because of what he did for them in the days and months and weeks and years after Katrina. Katrina, which ravaged that city in large part because we as a country abandoned it in a way we never would. A majority white city, and a city that in the days and weeks and months after Katrina suffered an epidemic of police violence not seen in this country since Jim Crow. That's your city, Drew Brees. That's the city that has elevated you above star football player to cultural icon. And Drew talks about his grandfather's fighting in World War II, as did mine. As did most of us around Drew Brees' age. It was a world war. A lot of us have a relative that fought in it. But I'm not from a military family. Aside from my grandfather in World War II, that's my only connection. But Drew Brees should talk to some of his black teammates that are from military families. My wife is from a black military family. Their experience a little different maybe than Drew's grandfather's. When Drew's grandfathers came back from World War II, they assuredly helped set up the life that then led to Drew Brees bringing Drew Brees through the GI Bill, through getting houses, getting housing, education, through benefits that were available to them. My wife's great-grandfather intentionally excluded, as nearly all black Americans were, from the GI Bill. Or my wife's grandfather, who signed up for the military in 1947, served 30 years, some of which, while the military was still segregated, he's still alive to this day to talk about that. Or my wife's brother, who's in the military today, and to this day carries his military ID around with him when he is in America. So if he gets pulled over by the police, he can show them that first with the hope they might treat him differently than they treat the average black man. So Drew, maybe talk to some of your teammates who have lived some of those experiences, and you won't sound the way you sound. And lastly, Drew, no one is asking you to take a knee. They are simply asking you to understand what the knee is about. And while you're at it, I'm going to ask you something, Drew. Can you please come up with a way for Black Americans to demand their equal protection under the law as guaranteed by the 14th Amendment of the Constitution of the United States of America that will be acceptable to you? Because they've only been looking for one for 152 years.
Very personal and important words, Nick, Kevin, Greg. Thank you guys so much for sharing all that this morning. We're going to take a break and have much more First Things First right after this. Welcome back. Now joined by Chris Broussard. Time for our rewarding performance sponsored by Capital One Venture Card. What's in your wallet? So the NBA has a return plan. The plan will be voted on later today. The vote will be expected to pass. So let us go over the details, shall we? 22 teams will resume the season in Orlando on July 31st. You got the top eight in each conference, plus teams within 6 games of a playoff spot. That works out to 13 Western Conference teams, 9 Eastern Conference teams. Teams outside the top eight that are included in this plan: Blazers, Pelicans, Kings, Spurs, Suns, and Wizards. And before the playoffs begin, each team will play 8 regular season games, and then there could be a possible play-in tournament for that 8th spot. All right, so there's a lot here. Nick, what's your reaction to the new format?
My reaction is I think somehow the NBA did something that I thought could be impossible. They might have threaded the needle here and found the fairest, best possible compromise on how to do this. Every single team that has even a 1% chance of making the playoffs under a regular 82-game format will be invited to this. You are giving legitimate advantage, as you should, earned advantage, to the teams who have accomplished the most over the first 60-some-odd games of the season. You are not making the end of the season just a total free-for-all where it's a 15- or 14-team tournament for the final seed. In fact, in all likelihood, we won't even have a tournament for the final seed. And if we do, it's just 2 teams with the team that is in the 8th spot having a significant advantage where they just have to win 1 out of 2 as opposed to the other team, the 9th seed, having to win 2 out of 2. And it allows for jostling within the standings because, for example, you look at the West, 4, 5, 6 in the West are separated by a game. So the Rockets, who are, you know, finished before the year shut down, they were in a bad spot. If they turn that around, they could go from 6 to 4 easily, which would drastically, obviously, change their first round matchup, could change their playoff fortunes. And so, and in the East, you have similar logjam in the middle part of the playoff bracket. So, Wilds, I had been critical about the NBA's ideas of a group stage and a giant play-in tournament. I love this. I think they nailed it, and I think it makes sense, and I don't think there's going to be many teams that can argue we got screwed here. I think it's the fairest possible outcome, Wilds.
Yeah, I'm a little bit confused by it. I mean, I like it. A little bit of it, Broussard, reminds me of your friend who always has these grand plans like, hey, we should go to the Super Bowl every year, or we should take a big trip to Paris. And then it comes down to it, and it's just like, hey, I don't know, you just want to go out to dinner? This seems like the lamest plan out of all of them. It's fine. It's 22 teams, but they're from group stage and reseeding. I'm a little bit disappointed that I got teased with all these awesome options. The next step, Broussard, and we were talking about before the segment, is who are these teams playing? That's what I'm interested in, because I don't know. I'm looking for the fairest schedule. I all of a sudden became a Blazers fan, Broussard. I'm looking for the fairest schedule. And Memphis has to play the Bucks if they're on their schedule as is. But Memphis also gets to play the Pelicans twice. If they get to play the Pelicans twice and the Blazers only gets to play the Memphis once, I don't know what's exactly fair. So I'm interested to see the next step, how the NBA will schedule it, so all of a sudden I'm a Blazers fan, my Blazers can sneak into the 9th spot.
Well, these are words that typically don't come out of my mouth, but I'm with Nick. I think Nick nailed it on the head. It's fair and it's right. Look, Wilds, you want a circus. You want chaos. You
That's
want
true.
Russian roulette. Hey, let's just... You know, what I, some of the proposals, my goodness, forget the regular, make it an 8-game regular season and let's just, you know, forget the previous 65 games or whatever. This is the fairest way. I'm with you, Kevin, in that, hey, it would have been exciting to have a play-in for the 7th and 8th seed. You know, maybe a round robin for those last two seeds. That would have been exciting. Yeah, I mentioned March Madness when we talked about it a few days ago. But let's face it, that wouldn't have been fair to the Dallas Mavericks. You know, if indeed they finish 7th, maybe they'll move up. But they were 10.5 games ahead of 9th-seeded Portland. For them to have to play in to get into the playoffs when they were great during the first 65 games or so wouldn't be fair. I'm with Nick, as I said, this is fair. You know, remember, they are not. They will play roughly 73 games each per team because teams have played roughly 65 games each. So if they add 8, that's 73. So that's still 9 games fewer than you play in a typical regular season. So the fact that if you're within 4 games of the AC, you get to play, you know, try to win in the play-in tournament, I think that's fair as well. I just think the NBA's done a very good job with it. And, Kevin, yeah, maybe some of these teams are going to face tougher competition than others, but that's just the way the cookie crumbles and the way the ball was going to bounce anyway because, you know, Memphis had a tough schedule to finish off the season anyway. New Orleans had a lighter one. So that's just going to be the case no matter what.
Hey, Broussard, I just want to kick it back to you real quick. We've talked about what we think would be best. We've heard what fans think would be best. Have you spoken to the players, what they would like, or where do you think they fell on all of this? Would this be the best situation and scenario for them having had the last 3 months off?
I haven't spoken to any since, you know, this last format looks like it's going to be approved. But I do know that I think overall players like it because there were a good number of players who didn't want to, from bad teams, you know, the teams that had no shot of making the playoffs, they didn't want to go back, you know, because guys were, you know, why go back for meaningless games? But also free agents, you know, who didn't want to go back and risk injury by playing 8 meaningless games. Now they don't have to do that. So I think those players are happy. I'm sure there are some guys that just want to go and play. But for the most part, I think those players are happy. And, you know, I think players look at it as it's fair, as we said, and that's all they ask for.
And the other thing it does is it allows the two teams that earned the most in the regular season, Milwaukee and the Lakers, two advantages that they deserve to have, especially because they're not going to have the advantage of truly having home court advantage throughout their side of the bracket. One is because it's an 8-game regular season and the Lakers are 5.5 up and the Bucks are 6.5 up, they've locked up those 1 seeds. They can decide how they want to treat these 8 games, where, how many of these games they would like to go all out, how many games they would like to have players resting, whatever they would like to do under these very odd circumstances while the rest of the conference is jostling for position. And the other thing it ensures that to me is important is that they are not put at a drastic disadvantage if you would have done just the free-for-all play-in tournament for the 7 and the 8 seed. You could have the 1 seeds playing far better teams than the 2, 3, or 4 seeds, potentially, depending on how that went. They're now guaranteed their first round matchup is going to either be the team it would have been to begin with, the 8 seed, or a team right behind them, the 9 seed, who, in order to get there, would have just played back-to-back single elimination games, essentially, and then potentially walk into that first round series somewhat spent. So I just really want to compliment the league on threading the needle. Wilds, you raised, though, an interesting question earlier about the specter of the Nets, and depending on what the thought process is on Durant and Kyrie, on whether or not teams will try to avoid the Nets during their, you know, jostle out of the 2 spot if the Nets stay at the 7, for example, and what that could mean.
I mean, that's why I like the idea, Nick, of the round robin with just all of the teams on 8 and below, or 7, 8 and below, and let them fight it out. Because I don't like it's not tanking necessarily, but I don't like kind of tournament manipulation where if the Bucks can take a game off or if the Raptors want to take a game off or whoever wants to avoid the Nets or a Durant and Kyrie Nets, it's going to be the same with the Blazers. I'm bigger on the Blazers than everybody else.
But yeah, teams want to move around,
like, ooh, I'm a huge Blazers fan now. The other interesting part about this, Broussard, is that we've seen the league kind of dip their toe rather than dive right into changes. We've heard a lot about a mid-season tournament or wanting this. I wonder if moving forward from here on out that we always get this play-in tournament, maybe 7-8-9 or just 8-9, because that game is going to be a fantastic game. It's just not going to be a random game. It's going to be a great TV property, and I know the league has been interested in developing new shows basically for a long time now.
Yeah, look, it's been exciting for baseball to have that wild card or play-in game, and I think the NBA is definitely going to look at this and watch it closely to see if it's something they want to go with going forward. No doubt about it.
All right, we're sticking with the return of the NBA. We're going to play a little game called Better, Worse, or the Same, kind of like my former dating life. That's next on First Things First. Back here at Chris Broussard. So now that the NBA is set to resume, we can take a closer look at where some of the contenders stand. The Utah Jazz, for example, they've got their share of problems. The turmoil between Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell. Bojan Bogdanovic is out for the season with a wrist injury. Other issues because lists work better in threes. So that's the Jazz. But what about everybody else? I'm going to let the guys do their thing with a little game I like to call Better, Worse, or the Same. All right, let's start with the Houston Rockets. Sixth place in the West, but they're all bunched up with a big group vying for that three seed. Broussard, the Rockets, are they better, worse, or the same since the season stopped back in March?
They're worse, and I know Lick likes to overlook any possible pitfalls for the Rockets, but the fact is, because James Harden and Russell Westbrook are so ball dominant and used to having the offense revolve around them, they need time to adjust to playing with one another. And we saw it at the end of the season, or what was the end of the season before the virus struck. They lost four of their last five games, three of them the non-playoff teams. They lost the games by an average of 11 points, and Westbrook played in three of those four losses. It's because the offense was not as Harden-centric as it's been over the last several years, and Harden couldn't adjust. He was shooting 37% from the floor, 25% from three, averaging 28 points a game, which is low for him, and he couldn't adjust to everything not revolving around him. 8 games is not going to be enough, unfortunately, for Westbrook and Harden to kind of figure it out and get rolling together before they enter the playoffs.
Man, right, it's a shame that right after Broussard had just totally nailed the previous segment, he's just going to butcher the Rockets take like that. I have no Rockets bias, positively or negatively, but you just made the exact case as to why the stoppage was better for Houston than arguably any other team. They were playing their worst basketball of the year. They had lost 4 in a row before they beat Minnesota right before it all shut down, 3 of which to terrible teams. Harden was mired in a slump, maybe his worst slump in 2 years. They needed the stoppage more than anybody, so of course they'll be better than if it kept going because they were headed straight down. Now they get to reset, see if they can revamp, if you will, or get back to where they were in January when they were playing great basketball. So Broussard's 0 for 1 to start, Jenna. It's a shame.
As long as we're keeping score. Moving on to Kevin Wild's new absolute obsession, the Portland Trail Blazers.
Yeah.
Not great, Wild. 29-37 on the season, even though they got at least 58 games out of Dame, CJ, and Whiteside. So your Blazers, my friend, better, worse, or the same?
Oh, way better, Jenna. Way better. Look, they can score the basketball. The problem is they can't quite stop the ball from going in. If we can show their defensive rankings this year, not good, as Nick would say, not good. They are 17th in record. We know that. Defensive rating 27th. Not good. Rebound percentage 21st. So what do you want? It's like your favorite movie, Castaway, Jenna. Uh-oh. Here comes a wonderful ship. Oh, it's Nurkic. And Zach Collins back. Look at this. Last year, 15th record. Defensive rating 16th. And rebound percentage 1st. So 21st to 1st. Going to be fantastic. And then Broussard. Guess what? We're going to see pretty soon. Boom. Playoff Melo is back. He's not just contributing 15 points a game. He's gotten 6 rebounds. Everyone's like, oh, does Melo still have it? Melo has it in a big way. We're going to see playoff Melo automatically make them better. Blazers all the way to about the second round.
Do I kind of like the Blazers now, too?
Is the thing.
Kind of on board.
I didn't know there was such a thing as playoff Melo.
Yeah, I invented it. It's like, hoodie Melo.
There is now, Broussard. There is now. All right, how about playoff LeBron to the Lakers now? 49-14, 5.5 games ahead of the Clippers for that best record in the West. Nick, your Lakers better, worse, or the same?
Again, you say my Lakers. Broussard says my Rockets. I am an unbiased NBA observer. I have no favorite teams. Facts. I'm agnostic on these things. It's proven by this. I think Lakers are a touch worse. They were playing their best basketball of the year. LeBron was playing his best basketball of the year. They had just beaten and demoralized Milwaukee and the wildly overrated Clippers. And then the whole world stopped. And so I still believe they can and will win the title, but it got a little harder for them, and they don't get home court advantage that they had earned. So to me, and Broussard, if you want to quickly respond, I think the Lakers are a touch worse here than they would have been had this never happened, Broussard.
That's not a bad point. However, it might help LeBron, who obviously is the key to everything for them, and maybe the rest helped him. We won't know that until we see him play, but at 35, maybe it helped that he got a few months off to get that body right.
All right, let's move on. Talk about the Nets now. What about the Nets? I guess it all depends on what about Kevin Durant. When the season starts again, it'll have been over 13 months since his Achilles surgery. Haven't heard anything from him as of late about a possible return. But Broussard, you got to factor him in. The Nets, are they better, worse, or the same?
Well, obviously, it's all about Durant and Kyrie Irving. If those two are back, clearly they're better. I mean, and it's been, I know Wilds has it calculated down to the second how long Durant has been out with the Achilles, and he should be ready to come back. I say if he's ready to play, come back, KD. There's nothing to lose. If KD and Kyrie come back and they get beat in the first round, nobody's going to say a thing. There's not going to be any negative to it as long as they stay healthy. And who knows, under these strange circumstances, maybe they catch fire, maybe they upset a few teams and go deep into the playoffs. I would not pick them to get to the finals in the East. However, you could not write them off. You couldn't with those two stars. Durant is that good. The Nets could be really dangerous if those two come back.
All right, let's talk some Sixers now. How about the fact that they were 29-2 at home this season, which is great if there was still a home game to be had. Everything's now down in Orlando. Wilds, as a result, is Philly better, worse, or the same?
Oh, Jenna, you're wrong there. This is their home. I think the Sixers should be like method actors where it's like, hey, while I'm on set, call me Billy. That's my character's name, and I'm only going to eat, I'm a vegan now because Billy, my character, is a vegan. That's what the Sixers need to do. They need to pretend they're home because when they're home, boom, best team in the entire league, better than the Bucks, better than the Heat, better than the Clippers, better than the Nuggets, better than the Lakers, better than everyone. So here's the thing. Guys, you are home. You can put up the next graphic. Ben Simmons went to high school. How about Embiid? Also went to high school. Rock school. Al Horford went to Florida. Josh Richardson plays with the Heat. Tobias Harris was in the Magic. Guys, you are home. Florida is your new home. Just say you're home, and you guys are the best team in the league, Nick.
Well, this is the most fascinating team when it comes to the neutral site because you laid it out. They are better than the Bucks when they're in Philly. They are worse than the Knicks when they're on the road. They're an abysmal road team and a nearly unbeatable home team. So will the neutral site lean more towards home or road? But the other big thing for Philly, why they're definitely better, is they got Ben Simmons coming back. Like, that is an enormous factor in their ability to pull off a first-round upset if the seedings were to stay the same against Wild's beloved Boston Celtics. And last point on this, just quickly, if I may. Wilds, I don't know what you envision method acting to be, but I don't think it's funny voices and a lot of herky-jerky movements. I'm not certain. No, not an acting coach.
That's
but
Billy's
I think that might maybe go back in the lab a bit. Or Billy. Billy the vegan, who evidently has something wrong with him.
On to the Clippers now. Clippers have been a step behind the Lakers all season long, but as Broussard will tell you, only a small step behind the Lakers, despite injuries, despite rest days, despite, what is it, chemistry issues as well. Nick, the Clippers, better, worse, or the same headed into restart?
Yeah, I'd say they're 5.5 steps behind the Lakers. They're 5.5 games behind them. The Clippers are the exact same. Before the season, during the season, right before the stoppage, and right now they're in the exact same spot. A team that's been wildly overrated by folks like Chris Broussard. A team that everyone that wants to say they are the best team in basketball, all you've got to do to believe they're the best team in basketball is have not watched basketball this year. If that's the case, you can make an awesome case for it. If you've unfortunately been watching the season, you're like, they're around the tier of like the Raptors. They're good, but they're not one of the, clearly one of the two best, and I would argue not one of the three or four best. Before the year, Broussard, this was a team that wasn't going to make the conference finals, and even under this new reformatted NBA, they're a team that I expect not to make the conference finals, Broussard.
I cannot let Nick get away with that revisionist history. Nick! The Clippers beat the Lakers, a fully stocked Lakers team, without their second best player, Paul George. What are you talking about? They were 2-1 against the Lakers. They are better, no question. Kawhi Leonard will be fully healthy. He missed 13 games. Patrick Beverley, healthy. He missed like 16. Paul George, healthy.
He
missed 22. These guys, with that rest, they are coming back fully stocked. And sad to say, they're coming for your Lakers.
So that's good to know. I know the NBA's reformatting, Jenna. I didn't know they were like you can do in 2K. They're turning injuries and fatigue off. In that case, I might have to revisit the Clippers prediction. But I didn't know Adam Silver had that type of power, Jenna.
I know what that is. That's a video game reference. We gotta take a break. Much more First Things First right after this. Stay with us. Here in First Things First, earlier in the show, we discussed Drew Brees' controversial comments in regards to players kneeling during the national anthem this coming season. Well, Brees has issued an apology. I want to read part of it to you right now. He writes, "I would like to apologize to my friends, teammates, the city of New Orleans, the black community, NFL community, and anyone I hurt with my comments yesterday. In speaking with some of you, it breaks my heart to know the pain I have caused. In an attempt to talk about respect, unity, and solidarity centered around the American flag and the national anthem, I made comments that were insensitive and completely missed the mark on the issues we are facing right now as a country. They lacked awareness and any type of compassion or empathy. Instead, those words have become divisive and hurtful and have misled people into believing that somehow I am an enemy. This could not be further from the truth and is not an accurate reflection of my heart or my character." Greg, I'll start with you. What do you make of Bree's apology?
I think it was great. I think it was necessary. And again, kudos to him. I will never tell someone that they're selfish or callous and then turn around and present myself in the same manner. And so with that, I personally accept that apology and I believe it to be true. However, when you puncture someone, when you cut someone, they have a scar. And that scar doesn't just go away. And no one ever just eliminates the idea that what caused the scar. So his actions are going to have to stand on top of those words versus those words being out front. And I think Drew knows that more than anyone. But again, It doesn't dismiss what he said. Obviously, I'm a forgiving individual, and just like the black community, we understand that there is a fight and that we need more than just ourselves. But if it only takes for us to do it, we are willing to do it.
Greg, that was very well said, as was your original comments in the A block. Nick, there's been a lot of talk about holding people accountable. I think Drew Brees was held accountable that there was a forceful pushback on his comments that were insensitive and obtuse. And like Greg said, if this apology holds water and he follows it up with actions, I think it's a moment of emotional growth for Drew Brees.
Yeah, you guys are both going to be more charitable on this than I am. 1,377 days. That's how long it's been since Colin Kaepernick was first asked why he was sitting at the time and then kneeling. 1,250 days. That's how long it's been since Colin Kaepernick last played an NFL game. That's a lot of time for a grown man in a majority black league to learn and to listen and to choose not to. And it's since there's been the reaction to this comments, it's been less than one day. And I am not close-minded on this, but I am skeptical whether or not someone actually can learn more in 18 hours than they've learned in the last 1,300 days about this topic. Last night during the protests about police brutality that were going on in New Orleans, I'm sure Drew Brees saw some of the people that I'm certain own his jerseys and have cheered him on at the Superdome were chanting his name, but not in the way he's used to. That maybe was very jarring to him. I hope the reason that they were protesting can be as jarring to him as well. So I applaud you guys, particularly you, Greg, because you have such an open heart. Maybe this is your, you know, being raised in the church, and maybe you're just kinder about this stuff than I am. And I wish I could be that way to a degree. But I saw Drew Brees 2 days ago post that blackout Tuesday on his Instagram, and I saw him today post the black and white hands clasping on Instagram. Somehow, on the day in between them, he missed the mark entirely about what this entire movement's about. Maybe he's learned in the last 12 hours, or maybe he's doing much, much needed damage control at the moment, Jenna.
All right, once again, Drew Brees issuing an apology for the controversial comments he made yesterday. We will leave it there and turn to some stories outside of that topic within the football world to start your morning, sponsored by Ram Trucks, built to serve. So, according to the Cleveland Browns offensive coordinator Alex Van Pelt, third-year quarterback Baker Mayfield has been voluntarily taking part in other position meetings, and his work ethic has supposedly been great. Greg, this is a lot of hype for Baker from a lot of different people. He's a changed man. He's more focused. He's this, he's that. Are you buying the new and improved Baker Mayfield?
Well, I'm buying it. I am buying it. And one of the reasons, because I know the head coach, Kevin Stefanski, and then I also know their offensive coordinator, Alex Van Pelt. Had the opportunity of being in meetings with him, with Aaron Rodgers. So what they're seeing out of Baker is really the norm when it comes to quarterback play and leadership. You entertain other meetings outside of your own because you understand the importance of the other individuals as far as getting what we desire to accomplish done on the football field.
See, I'd be a little bit nervous, like me personally, as soon as I go into somewhere, or if I'll go into like a piano store, I'd be like, man, I need to get a piano, or I'll look at some motorcycles, like, I gotta ride a motorcycle now. So for Baker Mayfield, they drafted Austin Seibert, his old buddy from Oklahoma. I'd be nervous, a little dropkick action. Doug Flutie, first time since 1941, Doug Flutie nailed a field goal. So keep that on your board, bettors. Maybe Baker takes a field goal this year.
Listen, Baker can't win. He's doing what we ask him to do. It's like everyone does it. People compliment his work ethic. It's called hype. My guy Baker is going to have a great year. He's going to silence all the haters and doubters, and I'm not mentioning anyone, Jenna Wolf, but you're going to see it. And we're going to come back here and we're going to say, you know what the key to that was? You know, he's not saying it. He's not the one saying it. His offensive coordinator, Alex Van Pelt's like, my God, Baker Mayfield won't leave me alone.
Well, they're doing
showing up at tight ends meetings, running backs meetings. Well, the games haven't started yet. Baker's going to prove everyone wrong. Just have to eat these words like I had to eat them every damn Monday last year when Baker threw a bunch of picks and you laughed at me. So, Alex Van Pelt, we're starting this in the right direction. Love to hear it.
Laughed and laughed and laughed and laughed and laughed. All right, let's move on to the Miami Dolphins now. Our friends over at Fox Bet have Ryan Fitzpatrick as the overwhelming favorite to be the week one starting quarterback over Tua Tagovailoa. Greg, if Tua is healthy and Tua is ready to go, why not just start him?
It's not that easy. And to be honest, when you look at Fitzpatrick and what he's done, he's probably the best short-term quarterback we've seen in NFL history. Like, he fills in better than anyone, and that's what the Miami Dolphins need. They just need him to stand in the gap right now until Tua is up to speed on NFL and how NFL play goes, and just even their offense and their offense alone. I don't like rookies jumping out there and being thrown out there if they have an opportunity to sit behind someone who they can learn from. And Ryan Fitzpatrick is one of those individuals that he can learn a lot from.
All right, Greg, quickly, before I give my answer, did you call Ryan Fitzpatrick the best short-term quarterback in NFL history? Did Ryan just get that honorific from my man Greg Jennings?
He definitely has. He steps up to the plate. Now, if you're asking him to be a full-time starter, different discussion. But short, intermittent guy, absolutely.
So Ryan Fitzpatrick's like a pinch hitter. Like, can't be an everyday player. But if you need him in a weird spot, he can do it. All right, I'm actually kind of on board with that because we have seen Fitzmagic go out there and throw 5 touchdowns in a game. Usually the next week he throws 4 or 5 interceptions because the world's got to balance out in that regard. But, Jenna Wolf, you know as well as anyone that I, during the NFL draft, won $10,000 through the Fox Bet Super 6. I then took that $10,000 and bet it on Secretariat in a fake horse race when he was, I think, 9-5. And we won that. We then parlayed that on something else. I can't quite remember. I think it was a boxing match. It doesn't matter. And now we've got a big pile of money. We've been it was on the NASCAR race. Our guy Harvick won it.
Yes.
So we have that big pile of money. We're going to take a portion of that money at +333, 3 1/3 to 1. Bet it on Tua. He's starting week 1 for the Dolphins, America.
Gotta go. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody.